by having that support of those centers and having these professionals that are just so much, they're all on the same page about this is about the child. Because it's a really ugly process to go through the legal system. Like, it's not so much focused on victims. And so to have these systems and these supports there that can at least buffer the natural realities of the legal system was just invaluable.
Welcome to another episode of Relentlessly Resilient, where real people share their real life experiences and the tools they've developed to move forward and live their best lives. I'm Jenny Taylor.
And I'm Michelle Scharf. Today, Jenny, we have with us Zumi Hales. She is a mother of two, and she has a very sensitive topic that she is going to be sharing with us. For those moms listening in their cars, if you have children in your car with you, you may want to be cautious. The content that we're going to be talking about today goes over child sexual abuse. Zumi, welcome to our show.
Well, hello. Thank you.
Thanks for coming on and being willing to share your story. You know, your story actually, in part, was an inspiration for a three-part series for us that we're doing. We're talking about the Children's Justice Centers across the entire state of Utah, support families in going through and discovering abuse, getting therapy, treatment, the interview process, and any medical exams that need to happen. They do an amazing work for the children of our state. And your story, in conjunction with another woman that is also sharing a story with us on child sex abuse that was not protected by a family member and was discouraged from reporting and didn't report until she was adult. What's fascinating to me is that you became a fierce advocate for your children, which doesn't really always happen.
Yeah, absolutely. It's unfortunately doesn't happen near as often.
Right.
As it needs to, in my opinion.
Right. So tell us a little bit about yourself. You're a mom of two.
Yeah. So I'm a mom of two. I grew up in a small little town in Idaho with a whole load of brothers and potatoes, you know, very cliche.
brothers and potatoes.
You know, you just can't do it without the potatoes and the brothers, right? And so I grew up in that way. And then I was married. I didn't get married until my 30s. And then I had these two kids and love them to death. They are just great opportunities to keep healing all the things that I've thought I could get away with overlooking,
yeah,
but not so much. But we live here in Utah now, and I don't know, what else would you like to know? I'm just me, but I'm very much like my kids' mom. I take my role as their advocate very seriously. I don't believe that children need to be braver than the adults.
Yeah, absolutely.
Powerful.
I do like that. I think that that's good. I know this topic today is going to be pretty heavy, but I think that your story is valuable for other parents who may be hearing things, maybe stuff on the surface,
sure,
about family members or whatnot. Let's hear your story.
Okay, so in regards to like why I'm here on this topic, there was a situation. My husband at the time, he's my late husband now, he had been in an accident, and I needed someone to watch my kids so I could go with him to the hospital. He had to take the helicopter tour, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had a family member who was able to go. My mom and my sister passed away, so I have a lot of brothers, and so they're like, here's a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And so he came to watch my kids, and I was then down at the hospital. And over the course of watching my kids, he ended up molesting my kids. And I found out when my four-year-old disclosed to me, I'd come back to visit him because those that were nearby had urged that I come back. And they're like, you need to come check on your kids. And so I went back to where we were living. We were on a ranch. And my daughter, she disclosed to me like a thing because it was her cousin. And he was 18 at the time. And so she shared with me this thing about what her cousin liked to do. And just for the sake of everyone, I'll spare like the specifics of what that narrative was, but she shared it. And it was one of those where I'm like, she's four. Could she or could she not be maybe a little bit confused about what that might look like on, you know, is she confusing this portion of her body with like an extension of that portion? And so I'm like, well, what do you mean by that? And then she shared another thing that I'm like, well, there is no room for confusion with what she just shared there. And so I knew in that moment, and he was at the house still. And so the thing that's interesting with my story, I would say, is that one of my very best friends, she'd worked for the Utah Attorney General's office, like the Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force, and worked for CPS and worked for like juvenile defense attorney as a social worker. And so we'd talked for years about just in general about how a parent's overreaction or underreaction can oftentimes be more damaging than the actual event to the child. And we had talked about how, like, the way parents had talked to their kids, how it screwed up the cases, or how, like, the parent went ridiculously overboard and, you know, where there was an opportunity to help someone versus going guns a-blazing, you know, end up as a headline on the news sort of thing. And so I'd had all these years of just training, in essence, of like how to talk to my child, how to say this, how to ask the questions without influencing the story and what to do. So I was able to actually in that moment be incredibly calm, you know, and so I was able to tell my nephew, I'm like, hey, I'm going to go take the kids to get ice cream. I'll be back in a little bit, and get the kids out of the house and reach out to the neighbor. I went and got ice cream, and then I was able to make some phone calls and just kind of get my bearings about me. And I went back, and I was just curious because he had told the family members, he was like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. I just feel so bad. She told me to give the kids a bath and to wash them extra good. And I was just doing that. And I'm so sorry if there's any confusion. I wish I could make this better. And I'm like, and the ones that told me, they're like, we don't necessarily believe him, but we're just letting you know what he said. And in that moment, like, we were still kind of all on like this real collaborative place of coming together, and we're all, you know, like, mm-hmm. okay, and we're rallied around the kid and whatever. And so I go into the house because I like to get really curious and see. I'll tuck away this little bit of information. I kind of tuck it, and then I'm like, okay, let's see what you say. And does what I have here tucked away like match what you're going to tell me? Mm-hmm. And so I go in and I'm like, hey, and they'd told me that they had told him to get his stuff packed together. Because the one thing I want to be really mindful about is that my child didn't ever feel like that they had gotten someone in trouble by telling me their truth. Mm-hmm. And so I was very mindful that it was always about what was best for my child, mm-hmm. and not about getting this person that I also love dearly, but now has proven to be not trustworthy, in trouble. And mm-hmm. so they had told him to pack his stuff up. So I go in and he's packing up and I helped him haul his stuff out. And I just waited to see if he ever said, I'm so sorry, there was a misunderstanding, and not a peep. And so I'm like, okay. And I just pay attention because I'm like, if I had a misunderstanding, I would want to clear the air, mm-hmm. especially about something so big. And I was really mindful also, I want to go back to the part where my child was disclosing, I didn't want to like jump to conclusions. I want to make sure that this was a real thing, because I know that like that this whole dialogue, this whole narrative, this whole thing can like, there's a lot of lives that are very much impacted if information isn't really collected in an accurate way. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to make sure that I wasn't reacting as a scared parent. And I was really just making sure that these were like the correct steps and what to do. And so I ended up helping him get his stuff out to the car. I gave him a hug. I knew it'd probably be the last time I'd ever hug him again. And showed him how to get to the freeway from our ranch because it was kind of back in the way. And so then after that, I went and got the kids, and I ended up taking my child to the doctor the next day because I wanted everything about this to be focused on my child's care and well-being, and not about getting someone in trouble. And it's so tempting in those moments when you've been done dirty, if you will, mm-hmm. or your child's been done wrong, or you've been hurt, to want to like go get the vengeance, right?
Out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so for my kids especially, I want to be so mindful to not go to that place. It ended up that we went to the doctor. They reported it. We had to do the forensic interviews, all the like exams, which is a really hard thing to do. And, you know, not to mention my husband's 120 miles away the other way in the hospital with severe injuries. He was in there for like 3 weeks with his injuries. And so, you know, so it was a lot in that moment. But yeah, so they were able to do that. And I was able to fill out all the police reports and be able to give all the information, and having not influenced her testimony either. So I knew enough and I'd been taught enough to know how to ask the questions and not project what I would think she might be feeling, or project like, oh, was it like this or was it like that? But I found out later that what had happened had started because this family member had picked the kids up from the hospital 120 miles away where it was at to drive them back up to the ranch, and had stopped at the freeway exit in our little town and had gotten the back seat and started there. Like, like couldn't even wait to get to the house. And for me, I interpret that as like, it was like such a, like an appetite kind of a thing. And so my one child is sleeping next to the one and the other one is being asked to like grant access, and is four, and they just watched their dad fly off in a helicopter. I mean, and their mom's gone, who's never been going. I mean, so many layers, so many layers. And then I find out that he had had, he would lock the younger one, who was like just shy of three, in a bedroom to hear the other one crying while he was doing the thing in the other room. And so there's just a lot of layers. And then but I sent him back home, and they were supposed to be a family reunion. I didn't go, and I'm like, well, you guys just please make sure you keep an eye on him. Make sure that he's not at risk right now while we get this taken care of. I'm like, I'm not looking to, like, guns a-blazing, come lock him up and put him away. Like, let's just make sure. I just want to be very methodical about it.
Yeah. Cousins in the family.
Well, the other cousins, but it's also, like, you know, let's just... It's so much easier to take like slower steps and not have to do any backstepping than it is to rush into things and then have to like go and undo things. Mm-hmm. And they were like, oh, of course, we will make sure and we will do that and whatever. Well, then I found out that they had left him unattended at the family reunion with the other kids. And I was so just flabbergasted as to, I'm like, why? What is this? You know, what is going on? And so, and I'll tell you that part of our story and why it went the way it did is because of that lack of regard from the other family members of this thing. Because when like the forensic interview came back, and I'm like, it came back that the evidence was basically like it supported the story that was being told. And I told that to the family member, and they're like, oh, so he was given a bath. I'm like, no. No. And the thing that I've learned is I think it's like, I don't know if this is correct, so don't quote me on this, but I believe it's like 97% of all children's disclosures are real. But man, people sure seem to appreciate the idea that they're not.
We've talked about that before where we question, I was like, did that really happen? Did the child make that up? But statistically speaking, most kids don't make that kind of stuff up.
Yeah.
Yeah. And why would they?
Yeah.
I mean, such a young kid, why would their mind go there?
Where would they even have the context?
Like, what is the reward, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we are going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to have some follow-up questions about the story and where it sits now. We'll be right back. Back. Zumi, what an amazing story. I just, it's so sad to think of such young children, especially at a time when there's a lot of confusion for them. They don't know what that means, that daddy just flew off in a helicopter. Now mom's not around. Now I'm going to be spending time with this cousin that, were they very close? Had they been?
No. Like, that's the part that was really, there wasn't that. And that was one of the scary things. And this cousin is adopted and, like, is, mm-hmm. like, I was very close with this member of the mm-hmm. family. But no, there was not really any real rapport between my kids and him. Like, so there, like, the grooming that he did was almost like a, he just kind of based it on this established dynamic, mm-hmm. right? Versus, like, that he'd put all, I mean, we went to his graduation a couple of weeks before, but my kid, like, hid behind my leg.
Right.
You know, so there was no actual real.
Yeah, because I'm thinking about a 4 and a 3-year-old child. I mean, they're usually shy. They're not really, you know, unless you spend a lot of time around them, they may be okay to be kind of compliant and read a book and do whatever for you, but they're not necessarily really engaging with adults, yeah. right?
Well, this kid was, at that point, was very oh, wow. outgoing and very fearless. And I mean, like, when she was even an infant, it was like, that baby swing better be on full blast. Like, about to launch her, or she was not content.
Yeah.
And so I swear when they cut the cord, she was like, it's about time.
So maybe she was more comfortable off.
She was just a very fearless, resilient, mm-hmm. like, vibrant, you know, whatever, but... Yeah. But she was also a very scared child. I mean, his grooming consisted of a Happy Meal and an ice cream cone on the drive.
Yeah.
Like, that was the effort of, like, and now you owe me. You know, it's kind of like the receipt idea of, I bought you dinner and now pay up. And so it was a very aggressive and predator. And he'd pulled over on that freeway exit. And then he told everyone that he got lost. He's like, oh, I got lost. And that's why he was late to get to the ranch, because there were some people that were, my dad and stepmom were there to meet him, to show him to the ranch. They were just going to be there for a little bit. Yeah. And I'm like, you were not lost.
Wow.
You knew exactly where you were.
So what happened after you finally make a report?
Mm-hmm.
What was that process like? Did you use a Children's Justice Center for trauma care, recovery, therapy, any of that kind of
stuff?
So
there was one that we worked with. We were in another state, and there were, like, the people we worked with were great. Like, where we did the forensic exams and the things like that, they were all done at the, like, a Children's Justice Center, and where they did the forensic interviews, where they have the kids, like, play with toys and kind of showcase mm-hmm. it. And I'll tell you that made the process, it's the process that nobody ever is like, oh gosh, I hope one day.
Right.
Right. Like, oh, and being a mom, I hope this is part of my statistical story. Like, nobody ever says that. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but to have that sort of support and that place where it was just very nurturing and very much focused on the well-being of the child, I appreciated that, especially because I'll tell you, for a moment, when my child disclosed what happened, for a moment, and I think this is just human, I was like, do we really have to report this? I'm like, is there any way that we can just kind of quietly take care of this and be okay? But I realized that that was coming from a place where I was feeling scared about what this was going to impact and how this was going to change things in my family.
Right.
And I was going to change. And I'm already, like, kind of the oddball out. Like, mm-hmm. I'm just am. It's just who I am. And so it was just kind of like, oh my gosh, is there any way? But then I knew that I could never ask my kid to carry this thing because I was a coward. And that's where I got that courage to do it. And so by having that support of those centers and having these professionals that are just so much, they were all on the same page about this is about the child. And although, like, I have been impacted in a secondary way
mm-hmm.
and have carried a huge portion of, like, the aftermath burden, by all means, I'm so grateful for having that support there, because it's a really ugly process to go through the legal system. Like, it is not... It is very much centered on the accused and their rights to protect. And please, because if I was ever accused, I would want my rights protected. So by all means. But it's not so much focused on victims. And so to have these systems and these supports there that can at least buffer the natural realities of the legal system was just invaluable, for sure. And so where the case is now, So it took 3 years and it finally reached a plea deal. He tried very adamantly to get like an insanity, mental instability kind of a thing. And he really entangled a lot of people in it, and really, and they wanted that to be true because it was easier than this ugly part of someone that we all had loved and had raised and was so much. And I mentioned that he was adopted, like, because I'm like, when you're adopted, it's this hope of like, we will give you a better life. Like, mm-hmm. And it was from foster care, you know, and so I just know there's so many layers there that I'm so compassionate to. But it was 3 years of me standing by myself, in essence, advocating. It was 3 years of me, like, with the prosecutor. I appreciate what they do, but they tend to like low-hanging fruit and shiny things. Mm-hmm. And so it was like holding their toes to the fire and them telling me, well, we can't do it. We can't hold it to that level. The judge will never go for that. And it was me Googling the judge going for it at some point, saying, well, look, he did it here, so go ahead and bring him back to court. And it was sending uncomfortable emails and saying, my kid can't eat a corn dog at the fair without remembering what took place. You know, and I'm like, show up, because this kid's life has been changed forever because of the choices of someone. So show up for him. And the plea deal, it took 3 years. It finally ended up at a 40-year plea deal.
Whoa.
Because you don't mess with my babies.
Yeah, that's unheard of, I want to say. I don't know. I haven't pulled up a lot of these cases in the state of Utah, but it seems to me that I've heard about a lot of these cases, and the amount of years are not
usually
that.
Usually get discounted so low it makes you sick to think that's all.
I have a girlfriend's family member that got 8 years for raping their adopted child, and I'm like, eight years? That's just, he's going to be out sooner than...
If only the child only had 8 years of remembering what took place.
Right. Yeah. And so these complicated stories that the times don't match the crime, you know? So for you to get that kind of a number is really amazing. And clearly the evidence had to be very clear.
It was actually circumstantial, but it was very much about like knowing how to run a clean case. And on my part of... And I do believe that's an education piece that as a society, like, we're lacking of like how to actually do that. But also it was very much that I didn't back down. And if I'd felt differently, I would have done differently. But I felt very strongly that for as long as he wasn't taking ownership for what he had done, then it wasn't actually safe to advocate or plead for any sort of leniency. Because in my mind, all that looks like is that the next time they just get more clever. And it came out in sentencing that there had been other incidents. And I just knew in my heart that I'm like, there's no way this is the first time. Like, there's no way that an 18-year-old gets in the back seat of a car at a freeway exit stop sign.
Right.
And starts as their first time.
Right.
And then, but he is, so it was 40 years with 20 years suspended, eligible for parole at 25% like of his time. Mm-hmm. And then it would have been that he would have had 100 years, but Jessica's law, it was in place when we started and then it was repealed and now it's back in place. But in that, he was able to slip in that window and avoid the mandatory 25-year sentences that they were having in that state. But every 3 years, he's up for parole once he became eligible to apply for it. So every 3 years, I go, we just had another review just last month. And I went and I write very benign letters to the parole board. I defer to them. I'm like, you guys know better. I don't know how his treatment's going. I'm optimistic that he would hopefully take advantage of it. I don't know. But this last time I heard him speak and they asked him, like, well, why did you do this? And he's like, well, I think it's because I looked at porn and I was addicted to porn and because she was the available female. And I just, and I appreciate the prosecutor on this case because I have great things to say about him. But it took a lot to really build that relationship with the prosecutor. And that is something I would encourage. Like, you have to be a person because there's so many cases. You have to make yourself a person. But they let me speak up and just acknowledge. And I'm like, okay, and asked the parole board, I'm like, are you comfortable with this level of accountability being released on the street? Would you be comfortable with your son or daughter dating someone with that level of accountability, that it's about porn? I'm like, every person in this whole situation here has probably viewed porn at some point or another, but we're not perping on four-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a lot of available and consenting adult vaginas in that 120-mile car ride that he could have at least solicited. I'm like, so to say that it was only because of porn and a four-year-old, I'm like,
well, and
like,
that also
okay.
indicates an inability to control oneself at that point, right?
If, animalistic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, which is not what we, I'm like, unfortunately, I'm like, you need to stay in time out.
Mm-hmm.
And, but, you know, I'm not an advocate either of, because I've been accused of being like very overly aggressive and like, oh, you just want to get people in trouble. You just want to like go do this. And I'm like, oh, you don't know me very well at all. I'm like, I'd love for everyone to just carry on their merry way. Because if someone took full ownership of what they've done and they really own it, I'm like, why? We don't need to lock these people up. Like, mm-hmm. let's go turn that into good things. But if they're not, and it's the child's fault, well, you know, that four-year-old, she gave me that wanting eye.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, like, no,
right.
no, because these kids have a right to grow up safe.
Yeah.
And they have a right to have adults running interference for them. And they have a right for those who are not okay to be not with them. And that's okay, you know, to just fight. But it is hard. And I will tell you that as much as everyone says, man, why doesn't everyone speak up? And we need to do this for our kids. And we need to show up. And we need to do all these things. When push comes to shove, it's a very uncomfortable thing for a lot of people when someone speaks up and says, that's not okay, what happened. And it can be a very isolating process. You have to know your why, or it will eat you up.
Well, and it destroys, like you said, you get different family members or other close people taking different sides or vantage points. You should do this, you shouldn't do that, or just be quiet because that's easier.
Right. Or just, why are you hurting his parents?
Yeah.
You're hurting his parents.
So you mentioned Jessica's Law. Can you explain that to me a little bit? I'm not super familiar with that legislation.
Like I said, we were in a state that had Jessica's Law enacted, and it was one where my understanding is that it required mandatory 25-year hard, fast sentences per charge.
Wow.
And so...
And it was in place and then out of place and then maybe reinstated.
Right. Over the course of the three-year span, it was... They repealed it in their state, and then now it's been reenacted. Like it's, So it's such a ride. It's such a ride.
Which, like you said, Michelle, most cases don't actually get 25 years.
Right.
I mean, you'd be lucky if they get a third of that.
Right. They're lucky if they even get 6 months half the time, because he was such a good guy.
Right. Right. You hear that all the time.
Because good guys creep on kids.
Yeah. It's just so sickening to think about.
We're gonna take a break, and we'll be right back. Back. Jenny, do you have any questions for Zumi? What are you thinking as with kids in your home now?
As a mom with kids, my number one question that just keeps running through my mind is, how are the children today? How old are they today? How are they doing? You've talked a lot about kind of the legal side of taking care of the perpetrator and making sure he's removed from access to these children or any other children or people, but how are they? How have you as the mother maybe helped guide them to develop resilience? And how old are they today?
No, those are great questions. And thank you for asking about them. They probably appreciate that. They're like, why is this all about you? It's been 8 years since the incident of reference today. And so they are 12, almost 13. And then the youngest one just turned 11.
Okay.
And since that time, we've had many more adventures. One of them being that my husband passed away unexpectedly in a really tragic way.
Ugh.
And so my kids have had a lot of opportunities to not only like implement resilience and to really make choices as to how they will react and respond to different things that are absolutely adverse. You know, they're actually doing surprisingly well. Like, statistically, they should not be doing as well as they are. Like, the statistics are really ugly for victims, especially childhood victims of sexual assault and abuse that way. And that was, you know, one of the things I did really lean heavy in when it was like coming to the sentencing. I'm like, my kid has this sentence now. So why are you getting off easy when it was your choice? But my kids now, the thing that I really have done, I recognized, is that my kids watch me. They watch the adults. They will take whatever the adults do and they model. And it was actually after my husband died, I recognized that I'm like, I need to go heal me. Because they'd been in therapy. We got them in therapy right away and all the things and did all the stuff. But I recognized that if I didn't heal the parts of me that were not whole or were not comfortable with this or would be resistant to my kids having boundaries, even with me as their parent, that I would actually go in and undo any progress they were making in therapy. So I actually, especially during COVID, I let them put a pin on it because I'm like, no kid wants to do Zoom therapy. Let's just be real. And so I let them just be kids and just not have to worry so much about that. And I focused on my healing and working through my stuff so that I could keep supporting their healing as it came. And thing that I didn't expect to come of that was that my kids have healed alongside me. So as I've healed and worked through my things and I've set boundaries, and but I've also allowed me to just choose and have what I want, that I give them that same ability to do that as well. And we have this really beautiful relationship because now I'm a sole parent. I'm not even a single parent. I don't get weekends off. It's 24/7. But we have this beautiful dynamic where, I mean, they can tell me that they think I suck. And I'm like, yes, I'm doing it right. But we can actually like talk about things. And there are so many layers and so many things. But I'm just, my kids are rock stars. Mm-hmm. I just have so much mad respect for them as they have navigated life where it has been impacted at these really selfish choices at the hands of adults that we're in positions of trust. And yet they still do it. Now, one thing, though, is have to be mindful of is that as we hit these different benchmarks, like developmental benchmarks and things, to just be mindful that it can show up in different ways and to really be supportive. And one thing for one of the children is, you know, I grew up being raised that the body is a temple, blah, 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 blah. But yet it's like it's your body, but it's kind of off limits. And so evolving this thing of like of just allowing my children to have that their body is their body, mm-hmm. and being supportive of things that maybe would go against like that conventional, you know,
like choosing the color of their hair or
just anything. Yeah. Like they mm-hmm. get to just own their body. I'll tell you, we have gone through some interesting things and I just marvel at how they roll. And I know a lot of it is that I just really try hard to be like water, you know, just roll with it, just go with it and do what you can do and let go of what you can't do. I just love seeing that in my kids and just evolving. And we're fine with getting them like the mental health support and mm-hmm. the different medications or whatever, but they're actually now at a place where they're off all of their medications. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't mean that they aren't like, I mean, they have the CPTSD, like where, you know, it wasn't just like, is there a boogeyman in the closet? Like there actually was a boogeyman in the closet. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, they've had all these things. The older one does great, goes to school, is in orchestra, all the things, has friends. And the younger one, though, has a lot more anxiety about being away from me. But that's the one that when they cut the cord was like, what's this bait and switch? So they're two mm-hmm. very different.
Well, right. Of course. And that's one thing that has to always be taken into considerations. Children are people and they're people born with their own identity yep. and personalities yes. and their own genetic makeup, which is much different than us as an individual. Yes. And other things can be suppressed or expressed differently. Right. And yeah. so all of those things go into that perception of how we view the world.
Yeah.
And it's true for children.
We
don't all think ages. Of children. Sometimes we don't think of them as people, right? They're just children.
Or we think they haven't grown into their personality yet, when in reality they come with
it. They come with it. And I look at my kids and I'm like, we're getting to know you together. just because I gave birth to you doesn't mean I have some corner on the market of who you are. I'm getting to know you just like you're getting to know you. And how can I be a support and run interference for you becoming who you are versus the interference for you mm-hmm. becoming who you are? Yeah. And yeah. so, you know, for all the things that I'm sure they'll have plenty to work through with their therapist when they're older, I do feel like that there's a few things that are going pretty good.
Well, that's really good
to hear.
Hear
that.
What does resilience mean to you?
Resilience means to me getting back up. Like when everything says and everyone says to stop, but yet that little part for me inside of me says, but you need to keep going because there's something that you need to do and it's needed and your voice is needed, that I let myself have the rest. I let myself have the minute. I let myself just recognize that everything just sucks. And then I pick it back up and I keep going. And if we haven't been to a family Thanksgiving with everyone in 8 years, then so be it. Because at the end of the day, I'm accountable for my kids and their safety and their well-being. I'm not accountable for other people's comfort.
Right. So true.
Yeah. Absolutely. And those are powerful words. It's sometimes really difficult because also as adults, we have our own unhealed trauma. We have our own demons that we're dealing with. We haven't maybe faced some of our darker shadow side stuff. We maybe don't feel secure within our own selves about our own life, let alone feeling the ability to actually reach out and protect this child, especially when it's going to be at such a big cost. And these things are at a cost, which is, you know, the story you shared, right?
Yeah.
Family members take alignments and sides and
the path of least resistance.
Yeah. Right. And at times, you know, it might feel that way for them, but they're doing everybody a really big disservice to not just allowing things to play out before they make those alliances. But that's not how we operate typically as humans. Mm-hmm. And we like to tribalize as quickly as possible and figure out who we're going to side up with and talk about.
That's a good way to put it, Michelle. It is. Yeah. We tribalize. We kind of jump to one side and then we just dig our heels in.
Yep. I feel like and then we look for those confirmation bias right. to yeah. just support us being right.
Yeah. I feel like that we're highly inclined and very prone, because this thing I've witnessed throughout these different adventures, as I like to, it sounds way better than like what they are if I call them adventures. The thing I've found is that everyone tends to gravitate to what feels safe to them.
Yeah.
And a lot of people, a stagnant way of just continuing on in whatever they've always done or the normal they've always known or the safety they've always known is where they gravitate. And so it's not personal. That's the one thing I have learned, is that when we've been rejected or blamed, shamed, like all these narratives, that it's not personal. It actually has very little to do with us.
Right. It has to do with the person.
It just has to be where they're at and what feels safe, because their world was made unsafe too with this disclosure.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it requires action. And, you know, let's be honest, we all want to just lay on the couch and Netflix.
Right. Exactly. It's a lot.
I mean, I would rather be talking about my Netflix playlist than this, but you know.
Than the realities of life. Yeah, that's so true. Yeah,
absolutely. Well, Zumi, thank you so much for coming in with us today and sharing your story.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for asking
me. I'm sure that it's going to help other families or people, mothers, fathers, maybe aunt caregivers that may have a child say something to them that they realize that there's really value and importance in carrying this through, even when it is uncomfortable for us.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So thank you for coming in.
It's been a difficult conversation, like you said at the beginning, some of these heavy topics, but an important one to have. And thank you for not just your courage to share with us today, but thank you for your courage to go to bat for your kids and not sweep it under the rug, even if sometimes family or outside influences want to just have everything be fine. So
it's fine.
Thanks for joining us. And thanks to all of our listeners for coming with us on another journey through what resilience can really look like and the difficult life circumstances that can help us develop greater resilience. So thank you for that. We hope you like what you've heard, and you'll find us on your favorite podcast platform. Go give us a like, a rating, and a review. That helps us know how to improve the show and also get word out about the show. If you or someone you know has a story of resilience you're willing to share, we would love to connect with you. You can either find us on Instagram at Relentlessly Resilient Podcast, or Facebook at Relentlessly Resilient, where Michelle has a really cool button that you can click on to create a little time to talk with Michelle, a quick phone call to discuss what you coming on the show might look like. So go ahead and reach out. We'd love to share your story as well. And together we can all build greater resilience.
And remember, whatever you do today, remember to be kind. You have no idea the struggles others are dealing with in their lives. Have a great day.